What's up, Black Men Catch Up comic book fans? James III here to talk to you about my comic series, Junior, available now on Kickstarter. The Ghost with the Most Past Due Child Support is back in four brand new issues of this semi-autobiographical supernatural comic series. It's got all sorts of spooky hijinks for fans of Beetlejuice, The Good Place, and The Mummy, stuff like that, and features award-winning artists from Marvel, DC, Dark Horse, and more. It's available on Kickstarter through June 9th. Go to ruleof3inc.com or follow me at ruleof3inc on IG for more details. Donate today!
Forever Dog.
Do you have any soldiers in your family? You know, like anybody served the country?
I mean, my dad was a private in the U.S. Army, and then my grandfather also was in the Army as well, but I can't remember. I want to say Air Force, but I think that's just because I can't remember specifically what it was. I knew it was something. He had like some kind of special designation that wasn't private, and so I'm just like, yeah, he was in the Air Force, but I don't know.
I feel like you're making that up.
Yeah, it was, but it's some. You know, he might have been like a. He might have had some kind of designation that was above private that I just don't know what it was.
I feel like you just went up a long, James.
I do. Yeah, and my mama is
my brother, he was in the Army for about half of boot camp and then he went AWOL. But I mean, whatever.
Oh, that's real.
I was my brother's trash. He like it's all good though.
Yeah. I mean, my dad was in the Marines for 2 years, but he didn't go to war. And then my brother-in-law is in the Army Reserves right now. And I think both of my grandfathers were in the Army to some degree.
We get it. Show off.
But I don't think anybody saw a combat, not that I know of, you know? So, yeah. You know.
I think my uncle, step-uncle? Uncle, whatever.
Step-uncle, okay.
Like, it was like my stepdad's brother. He was in Vietnam. And like, he came back with some stories of like, he was one of the people who had to jump out the plane and all that shit. And I was like, bruh, what? And you see, like, he walks with a limp.
He was a paratrooper? About, like,
dog, the stories of how many people don't make it to the ground.
What?
I was like, like, because apparently, like, if you pull your parachute, you're kind of floating. So it's
it's, you know, so dangerous.
It's super dangerous.
Right, but how many people don't make it to I feel like at that level,
man,
the percentage should be worked out a little bit more.
Right, but it's like they're also jumping during combat, right?
They're jumping during combat.
So people are shooting
and planes is going through. They're jumping through planes. Like,
oh, I'm good.
People are shooting at them.
Yeah, I'm good.
Yeah. And he always had stories about how they were over there and they kind of were treated nice, but came back and they were just black in America. And I was like, well, shit. This is
so, like, so sad.
Yeah. I was like, damn, you. I was like, I didn't know what to say after that.
Yeah,
man.
So my grandfather was flying his planes because he was in the Air Force.
Here we go. Here we go, James.
When he was flying his planes, you know, he was talking about
it's
he had
not
stories
a competition. What's this? Give me a story, James.
No, I'm just saying he has stories. I mean, I don't need to work. His story.
James,
it's not my place to tell.
Okay. Unless you got a soldier story.
Wow.
Is that
I thought you were helping him
is
with that.
Is that the
James.
Intro?
Yep.
Yeah, he does that.
What's that?
Thing.
Oh!
Yeah, I listened
oh,
to the
Oh, you're
podcast.
Right. Oh, I see. Oh, yeah. I mean, no, I mean, James was just talking about stories, but I was just saying, unless he has a soldier story.
It's like, literally what I... It would have been a... So, had I told it, it would have been a soldier
oh,
story.
Oh, do you have a soldier story?
It just feels wrong to say it right now.
Does it?
Oh, no, please say it.
No, given the fact that he's clearly trying to... To end this.
What am I trying? I feel like I have done.
Can we please start the show?
All right, let's start the show.
Golly.
Jonathan Braylock, James III, Drum Milligan.
What more can I say?
You know what it is.
Black men can jump.
Welcome to Black Men Can't Jump in Hollywood.
Hollywood City.
Well, where are you from? England.
That's the.
I actually did really. I do like that line. He doesn't say
that line was
anything.
Great.
He doesn't say anything like James just said it.
No, that's how he said it. He goes, well, where are you from?
Wait, what?
Where is that?
It's when Waters is like going in on everybody, like, why you fools talk like this, that fools from around here, Southern.
He's like, oh, I bet you from the South, aren't you?
Well, where are you from?
Oh, when Denzel.
No, it's Denzel saying it, and Denzel has never sounded like your sound.
Wait, Denzel says it like that?
Yes.
James, no, not James,
like
don't
that.
Do
you
this.
You know he's putting on a voice in this movie. Y'all know he is. He putting on a
not
voice.
Not like I that.
I just finished it 1 second ago.
It sounds like Denzel playing a pimp. Like, that's what it sounded like.
Well, where are you from, bitch?
Like, that's what it sounded like.
Where are you from? Yeah, it sounds like, much the cooler.
There was no time. It was because he was like,
no,
quiet.
Yes, there was.
He was like, well, where?
All right, we're done with this.
Okay.
You're not going to disrespect.
I mean, I don't like it.
More and more disrespectful.
Don't you dare do that to Denzel Washington. Oh my goodness.
For those of you listening right now, this voice that sounds like it could be a captain or maybe a corporal in the army is you know, that of a commander, of course. Is Jonathan Braylock?
Do you believe that?
What's that?
Like, for real. Like, do you believe your voice gives off that kind of...
You're right. It's more like a general vibe. Okay. Fair enough.
Wow.
This voice is... I'm so mad. You do that. It throws me off. It throws off what I would do. This is Gerard Milligan.
And I'm James III.
Okay.
Your voice is deeper than that, James.
Nope, that's where it is.
All right, enough messing around because we have a guest in the studio today.
We do.
Oh, wait.
Very accomplished guest.
I got to do my drums.
Are you going to do drums or are you going to do like military horns?
Well, oh, no. I'm not in the military. I can't do the horns.
Okay, you're right. Okay.
But I was in the band when I was in middle school, so a brother can do the drums. Okay, here we go.
All right.
Ready, Brace?
Yes.
Ready, Brace?
Yes, go ahead.
Terrible.
Wow. Okay, 2019 winner of NBC's National Stand-Up Comedy and Variety's Top 10 Comics to Watch. It's Frankie French, everyone.
Hey, guys.
What's it? Those drums were for you.
She said,
those drums were for you.
Thank you.
Those drums were for you.
I appreciate the attempt, but those were not drums. That was
not a special.
You
said the WB? Says WB for all.
Yeah, that was more like cooing with a baby. That was like, welcome to the WB. Like, I don't know.
But you know what? You know, I like that better. That's a special throwback. Okay. No one's gotten a throwback like that. So you know what?
I appreciate it. Thank you. And you can just refer to me as queen of the world. Okay.
Love it.
Of the world.
Queen of the world. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, shut your face. Thank you for having me.
We are, of course, reviewing A Soldier's Story, which is a 1984 mystery thriller film that came out. I was going to say Denzel Washington, but he is one of
the stars.
Supporting characters.
It's a lot of stars, yeah. Man. It's Howard E. Rollins Jr., yeah. Robert Townsend,
Adolf Caesar,
David
Allen Greer,
yeah.
Robert
Townsend. That was Patti LaBelle singing in this.
Yeah, Patti LaBelle. Yeah.
Patti LaBelle.
My God, she was singing.
Who was the...
Who played CJ?
No, the sergeant.
He passed away. Yeah.
Who's, Adolf Caesar.
Adolf Caesar.
Adolf Caesar. His name was Adolf Caesar.
He was nominated for an Academy Award for this role.
Absolutely.
For Best Supporting Actor.
He should have been.
Yeah, he kills it.
He should have been.
Robert Townsend, we say that yet?
Yeah.
Robert Townsend.
Yeah, we did. This movie
he
has...
He was so young in here, man.
Yeah, they all were. This movie has a 92%. On Rotten Tomatoes. It was nominated for 3 Academy Awards, Best Picture, Best Supporting Actor, and Best Adapted Screenplay. Charles Fuller, who is also the playwright of a soldier's play, which is what this movie is based off of.
Oh, damn.
Yes. And yeah, it also made, I guess it says $21 million
Yeah, that's not bad. Oh, wow.
Back then, that's not
bad. Damn, yeah, that's not bad.
$21 million
off of $6 million.
Off a $6 million budget.
That's not bad.
Yes.
That's bad.
Also, to get $6 million in 1984, like honestly,
for an all-black movie, that's pretty. Yeah. That's pretty impressive, actually.
Yeah, with a baby Denzel.
Shoot,
he was a baby Denzel.
A little baby Denzel.
Yes.
He was wearing that uniform, though. What? I said, okay, Denzel.
When my man showed Denzel up in the beginning, his jaw pushed all the way out.
It was.
Super Denzel-y. Super Denzel-y.
It was. He was real Denzel-y. I was like, okay. I was like, oh, I don't know goodness why I feel funny, but I feel funny right now.
Wow. The basic kind of premise of the film is a captain, Richard Davenport, who is a lawyer, tasked to go investigate a murder of a black officer who is a sergeant in, where are they? Oh, they were in Louisiana. Okay.
Yeah, they were in the South, baby. As they
during World War II, a bunch of black soldiers. And yeah, that's it. He's trying to find out who killed this sergeant. All right. Shall we do our initial thoughts? Frankie, would you like to start us off with what you kind of your initial thoughts of watching this movie? Yes. Have you seen it before?
Oh, I've seen it many, many times before. Yes. My grandmother raised me and it was one of her favorite movies. Mm. And so we watched it all the time. So this was very nostalgic for me to rewatch it. And I remember watching it as a kid and not fully understanding what I was watching.
Right.
Do you get what I mean? And so now kind of going back and rewatching it, a lot of, I'm like, oh, okay. So I get it. I can relate to a lot in the movie. Growing up, when my mother was around, she was a stickler about language. And so even if I was on the phone with a friend, I couldn't use slang. She would like snatch the cord off. Yeah. She was very particular about the way we spoke. And so kind of watching that parallel and understanding, I didn't have empathy for the Sarge when I was little. I was like, he was a bad guy. He was so mean. And I didn't understand the psychology of what he had gone through growing up and with his father and all of those different things that affected who he ultimately became. So now watching it through a different lens, I have more sympathy and empathy for him as a human. And I'm just like, oh, wow. This is a completely different thing than what I initially thought. And it's just so interesting how a lot of those things that they were going through in the 40s, you know, this fictional depiction, pretty realistic, we still experienced it now, you know, and it's just so interesting to me how we, just as humanity and as a society, we haven't grown or evolved as much as we think we have in terms of our humanity and our empathy. So those are my initial thoughts.
That's great.
That might be the deepest initial thoughts we've ever got. That was beautiful. God damn. That was the beautiful.
All right. Please take this clip and post it.
Oh my goodness. That was wonderful. God damn.
What do you think, Gerard?
I mean, I liked this movie a lot. Honestly, I remember seeing this when I was younger, but I'm more familiar with the play because I was obsessed with like the National Negro Ensemble here in New York. Cause like the legend was, you know, Denzel played this part, you know, in theater. And then like, that's how he got in the movie. Then like Sam Jackson came and then like, that's how he got on. And like, this play was like such a big deal to like, I mean, that's what they say. I mean, I seen photos of him, but I don't know if that's real. Like somebody just was in the audience, like, let's adapt this play and put that black man in it. But it was cool to watch it. And it's so funny. Because the sergeant, I immediately started hating. But once you started peeling back the layers, like he reminded me just of like, sadly to say, some of my relatives from the South who appearances matter so much. Like appearances matter. Like the coloring of the cousins amongst my family matter. Like, you know, eye color matters. So like if you were one of the cousins with was fair skin with like green eyes, like you were the peak, you know. If you were like brown but then had like blue, like hazel or gray eyes, you could be like in the middle. Like the sisters were named like Beauty and Punk, Punk being a dark skin one, Beauty being a light skin one, and it was all this kind of like I don't know, man. It was just this inner pressure and hatred. So to see this guy do that to other black people, because that's what he knew, but also like the bitterness in him, even though he had a powerful position, I was like, man, this was very well done. And also, I looked it up. This was very well done. It was a white director. And I was like,
shut up. I didn't even know that.
Yeah. 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 Wow. White dude directed it. I was like, also, sorry, last thing. I did like the play, like the fact that this was a play that was a movie, but it didn't feel like a play. Like sometimes I feel like when they adapt a play, it's like, oh yeah, we shot this in like one room. Mm-hmm. Whereas this was just on one location, but it felt more lively. So I love that.
Well, I mean, I had never seen or read the play. And I had never seen this movie before. It was one of those, like I knew the legend. I knew the legend that Gerard was just talking about. Like, I knew of the play. I know of the Negro Ensemble Company. I was steeped into that world, but I'd never seen this play and had never seen this movie. And so the whole time I was watching the movie for this, I was just angry at myself for having never, I'm just looking up right now. Like, there was a production the fall of the year that I moved out to New York off Broadway with like Anthony Mackie and Mike Coulter and like,
Really?
Tay Diggs. All of these people were in this, and then it was just off Broadway. It was just on Broadway right before the pandemic.
Yeah,
and we had just moved at the time. We had just moved from New York, so I couldn't have seen that. But like, it was so good. And Charles Fuller, I've read Zoom In and The Sign, which is a play I really like that play. I like this playwright. And I don't know, I thought this was so good. I thought it was a great adaptation. My only issue adaptation-wise, not knowing what it's like on the page for the play, is like, I wouldn't have wanted to hear the lines from, and I don't know if this is different from the play or not, but the lines from the sergeant of like...
Oh, right before he...
Right
in
before
the beginning.
He got... Yeah, had they not it, done that, it would have been more of a mystery. Yeah. But I thought it was great. And like it was really cinematic. And it kept making me think about like, oh, is this just monologues in the play? Probably not. They probably have monologues that lead into scenes, sort of just like what we're seeing. But it really translated super well to the screen. You know, I thought that was, I thought all the acting was great. I thought Melissa's uncle was great in this. I really had a great time watching.
I mean, I had also never seen this movie before, and it was great. I mean, also shout out to longtime listener Stitch Jones, who's been asking us to do this movie for maybe 4 years.
Wow.
We finally are doing it.
We did it.
When I saw it, I was surprised to see it on the list and then so excited. I was very excited to see it.
Yes. Thank you for finally getting us to review it. I mean, it was, I think I also didn't, I don't really know much about Howard E. Rowlands, who I believe was the captain. And so I'm interested to kind of go through his filmography a little bit, because I thought it was, I mean, this was such a strong movie and he played such a kind of lead role in that. He looked a little bit like Sidney Poitier. He kind of gave me that same vibes of like the stoic, handsome, strong black leading man. And this was like the cast of this film is incredible, so it was very fun. I agree, James. It was kind of a little obvious from the beginning that it was, I didn't know exactly who it was, but I was like, well, it's clearly a black person who killed him, just based off of what he
said when I first saw it.
I was hoping it wasn't a black person. I think that was my thing. Please don't let it be a black person.
Well, just the specific line of they'll still hate you.
Yeah, I thought he was talking about the black military people. They're still going to hate you, white person. What you're doing.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like,
got it.
Yeah. That's how when I was little, that's how my brain interpreted it.
Got it. Again,
I was like, okay, I can see how you could get to
right. I was reading it as like they're still going to hate you because you're black. But I didn't know who it was necessarily. I was just like, oh, okay. But yeah, this the other thing about this story is it is tragic in the sense that there's no real good guy. Even the captain, you know, at the end, like it's one of these things of like, man, we're like beating up on each other, killing each other. It's like we're being pitted against each other in this way. And there's no like clear right or wrong kind of answer to me. And it is kind of sad in that way, but it's very well told. So yeah, I mean, I'm excited to just kind of talk about this movie.
Me too.
I just looked up the play and it like before it just ended, it's crazy because David Alan Grier plays the sergeant. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
in the play, and it's like so many just like young cats, and I'm pretty sure we all know in this Broadway play, and I'm like, God dang, this thing was stacked, but I don't think they're bringing it back now. Oh man,
that's fantastic. Anyway. I hope they do. I'd love to see it live on Broadway. That'd be fantastic.
Who was in the?
Its run only because of COVID,
right?
So like it.
Oh, is that why?
They could bring it back.
I hope
they could bring it back. Things have reopened, but it's all a matter of like. You know, they actors like David Alan Grier and Blair Underwood, like they and Kenny and the director, you know, they probably move so much shit to make sure that they're available to do this play for this period of time.
Right.
Because apparently they both did the Broadway. I mean, the Negro Ensemble one. And I was like, yo, at least Blair Underwood. And I'm like, yo, that Negro Ensemble, it sucks. It's not what it used to be. But I'm like, so many wonderful black actors came out of there that like. I just wish they still had that theater in Harlem, man, where you could just see like black plays with a big ass stage. But what can you do? What can you do?
A little bit of backstory too. Apparently, so this is according to Wikipedia, but let's see, where is this source? It's sourced from a Soldier Story box office data. It said that many of the cast members and the director worked for scale or less under a tight budget.
Oh, wow.
The director said no one really wanted to make this movie a black story. It was based on World War II, and those themes were not popular at the box office. Mm-hmm. Warner Brothers turned it down, as did Universal and Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. And then Columbia's Frank Price read the screenplay and was deeply interested, but the studio was hesitant about its commercial value. So Jewis then offered to do the film for a $5 million budget and no salary.
Wow.
And when the
Dang, that's disrespectful.
And when the DGA insisted he must have a fee, he agreed to take the lowest possible amount. So that's why it only cost around $6 million. It still ended up grossing about over $21
million. I saw somewhere else that Caesar Washington and Riley were all in the play, but so was William Allen Young. As well, I didn't know.
Right. Yes.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Damn. So. He was about to do it, and they were going to let him do that until DJ stepped in. That's insane. Well, that's insane. The studio was like, all right, cool. We just won't pay you. Like, that's insane.
Oh, yeah. Oh, we don't have to pay you? Great.
You was going to do it for free?
Black stories aren't seen as valuable or necessary.
Right.
Why does anyone need to know our stories? You know what I mean?
You know,
so, they're not interesting enough.
No, right. But this movie is so, like I said, watching it as an adult, I connected with it on so many different, and it's so beautiful, and the depth of pain that everyone's going through, this collective experience, but they're experiencing it in such different ways. And I remember growing up in an all-white neighborhood, right? And I was literally the only black family. And I remember when I was a small child, I was born into the Nation of Islam. And then as I got a little bit older, we converted to Sunni Muslim. Mm. And then as I got older, religion just went away at some point. And so I grew up in a very black experience, even though I lived in a very white area. But as I got older, I had nothing really grounding me to my blackness anymore. And so I was living in this all-white neighborhood, this all-white area. All my friends were white. And I'm black. And I didn't have any context as I got older for what that meant. And I'll never forget, I think I was probably 11, and I was walking with a group of my white best friend, this guy. And he says to me, "You're not like other black people. You're like one of us," is what he said. "You're like one of us." And I remember in that moment feeling proud of that. Right. And that was one of my most humiliating, when I think back to it, I'm so ashamed of that young girl. And I feel so bad for her to feel like, oh, yeah, finally I belong. That's not okay. And there's so, in this movie, some of the characters are so deeply steeped in that. And the sergeant, like when I say I have so much empathy for him, he was a monster on the surface. But really, that was his pain that we were seeing. That was his own internalized, the abuse that he experienced. You know what I mean? And we all know what it's like to traverse a world where you're just not good enough. There's no way you're ever going to be good enough. And just the pain of that, just walk around. I can easily be brought to tears when I hear stories, what someone else may think is a small story of racism, because my brain can't comprehend. How do you hate me for something that I just can never change? I'm a human, the same as you. How do you not see that?
That's one of the white dudes said in that, like, the soda's like, "Don't blame me because God made you black."
Right.
Yeah. As he says to his face, "Don't blame me."
The most wild and yet accurate line. You
so
know what
accurate.
I mean? Yeah.
"Don't blame me." I mean, think about it. John James, like, have y'all ever had that? Like, I can count the times I've had, like, "Oh, man, you're not like one of them."
Oh, yeah.
I mean, come on, man. I'm blacker than you.
Oh, yeah. Like, I'm blacker than you. I like these rap artists and you don't, so I'm blacker than you.
James is a black white person. I have that, a quote from someone saying that.
Oof.
Melissa, what about you? You can just type it in the message. I'm just curious if 5
Oreo,
What is sad, I just wanted to point out, is that 5 black people right now have all had the same secular experience of having their blackness questioned. You know what I mean?
Right.
And still having to continue with their everyday life.
Yeah.
You know?
And like, it's usually based off of some racist stereotype. But then it's not like they're not seeing us as black. You know what I mean? Like, that's the other thing about it. You know,
right.
It's like, you don't stop being black. It's just, you know, you're
black plus.
You're not one of the scary blacks.
Yeah.
But then that sucks too, because then that also like causes a division. Because I remember growing up, like, I wasn't the toughest to a certain extent. And then that made it so that, you know, I had to go out and prove how black I was.
Right.
You know, so it got to that point of like trying to overcompensate for it. But then, you know, you didn't want to be one of the kids that they called like corny or, you know, this and that. So it's like, it just causes a subdivision of like anger amongst the black people based on shit that we have nothing to do with.
Yeah.
Oh, this movie.
But we do it to each other, even within the world of stand-up.
Oh, yes.
In the world of stand-up, the way I have, there's a group of comics that are, they label themselves as urban comedians, and they love to call me, "You're a mainstream comic, Frankie, you're mainstream." And so that's interesting because I can work all the same rooms that you can, you know what I mean, and still do my job well. But they say it in a way to diminish me and who I am as a black comedian. You're not really a black comedian, like how we're black comedians. You know what I mean? And I just find, you know what I'm talking about, James?
No, that's so
just
hard,
I can
man.
Just hear it. I can just hear, I haven't had that experience, but feels like very much like a real thing of like, okay, all right, fine. These are the divisions, you know. You're mainstream. You've sold out. Whatever mainstream means. It's like, okay.
it's like you got a code switch in everything. It's like you got a code switch in life. You got a code switch in comedy. It's like, and the thing is, it almost feels like I was reading this article with Issa Rae just talking about Insecure in the final season. It's like, it's so hard to please everybody because you're trying to, like her, trying to do a show for black people, but then it's on HBO, but it's like, oh, can white people watch this show? Is it comfortable enough for them? And it's like, I don't want it to be comfortable enough for them.
Right.
I'm even thinking about this movie, and it's like this movie, Denzel's character, I don't know why I jumped to him, but his character, to me is so relatable because, I mean, aside from what he does eventually, he's relatable because he's seen both sides. He's seen, like, you know, Hollywood, California. He's been in the South already, and now he's here. So he's seen, like, you know, the liberal, the not, and now he's kind of in this place, and it's like he is now fed up completely with the bullshit. Doesn't matter if it's white, black, like, right. I came here to do this job. I'm completely over the bullshit. And that's one of the things that scares me about society when it becomes, you know, I feel like black people, we got to take a lot. Black folk, we take a lot, man. And it's like, what happens when, like, people just get stop? Up.
Yeah.
It's like, we're just tired of this now, you know? That's my fear.
What's up, folks? This podcast is sponsored by Earnin. Life doesn't happen bi-weekly, so why should payday? The money you earn could be in your hands today with Earnin. Earnin is an app that gives you access to your pay as you work, up to $100 per day, or up to $750 per pay period. Just download the Earnin app and verify your paycheck. Then access up to $100 a day as you work and leave an optional tip. Any money you access plus tips are automatically repaid from your next paycheck. Think about it. Say you're going out for a special date, or it's getting hot, y'all. You might need a fresh outfit for brunch or something nice, or maybe you just want to feel good and take yourself to dinner. Earnin can help you today. Make Earnin a part of your financial routine. Enjoy Earnin's over 3.5 million customers who say things like, "When I think about Earnin, I think about financial stability and security. It gives me a lot of peace of mind." Mm-hmm. Download Earnin today. That's spelled E-A-R-N-I-N in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the Earnin app, type in Jump Under Podcast when you sign in. It'll help the show out. Jump Under Podcast. Subject to your available earnings, location, daily max, and pay period. See earnin.com/DOS for details. Earnin is a financial technology company, not a bank. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
I love driving with Uber because I have access to 24/7 live support, which is really great because I like to drive at night. I like to know I have support in the middle of the night or early in the morning. I can chat with a live agent 24/7. As a female driver, I get it. You need to feel protected. And Uber has our back for sure. Uber, earn like a boss. Sign up to earn today at uber.com/boss.
This episode is brought to you by Clif Kid, makers of Z-Bar. It's the perfect energy snack bar for kids, for just about anywhere. Soccer practice? Check. Playground fun? Check. After school dance rehearsals on the other side of town during rush hour? Z-Bar is perfect for that too. Soft baked and made with wholesome ingredients like organic oats, Clif Kid Z-Bar is on-the-go snacking made easy. Visit CliffKid.com to learn more. That's CLIFKid.com.
So, what are you thinking for lunch?
I can't. I'm getting new window treatments.
Why don't you just go to Blinds.com?
Because I need custom products.
Blinds.com products are made to order, and they ship samples to you fast and free.
Wow, how convenient. Tell me more.
They can even verify your measurements and handle the installation. Plus, they're 100% satisfaction guarantee.
Well, you've convinced me. Let's go eat. I've got time now.
Shop Blinds.com and save 40% on selected products. Rules and restrictions may apply.
The way this movie, I mean, the movie starts with the murder. We see the sergeant kind of stumbling around drunk, and then we see this gun kind of get pointed at him, and he says something to the effect of they'll still hate you. And, you know, the squadron that he's kind of looking after is told about this. I think Denzel is one of the people who's like, "Well, do they have any leads?" And they're
first
like,
"First person to say no. That."
Yeah.
And now looking back, yeah. Knowing what I know about you, yes. I'm like, "Nigga, you yes. did it!" Like I know exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
yes. And then somebody's like, "Well, it's obviously the KKK," and they're like, "What? Did you see it? Then shut up! Like, don't say anything." And yeah. It becomes kind of abundantly clear that the white officers don't really care who did it. They just want to make sure that all these black soldiers aren't going to do anything about it.
100%. They make the town off Tynan. They make the town off limits. Like you can't even go in.
Yeah.
Town. Yeah.
Yeah.
But isn't that like real life? Like if some black person gets shot in the street, it's like, hey, black folk, hey, listen, we know us white folk, we will burn down the town when we win a baseball game, but don't y'all do the same
right.
for having someone murdered.
Well, which is
for
your so interesting. I was just like, exactly what you're saying, Drell, like even within the world of this movie, right? Why do the white, so when the captain comes and he's tasked to lead this investigation, everyone's concerned about him. Why? Because he's a black, you know, lawyer.
He's
black. He's a captain, right?
I hate
and they're like, no, you, the white, not only do white soldiers, but the white townspeople are not going to take well to a black officer kind of pushing people around and asking questions. We are going to have a riot on our hands by the white people.
Right.
And if that happens, that's on you guys. It's like, right. It's not like, hey, we got to, if a riot happens, we're going to make sure that we clamp down on that as hard as we possibly can. We're going to tear gas them. We're going to shoot them. You know, none of that. It's like, hey, we can't let these white people riot because then, you know, if they go kill a bunch of you, that's on you.
We can't protect you. Yo, I like, Braylock, you saying that, I was reading this book and I shouldn't have read it. I will say that now. I shouldn't have read it, but it was about, towns they can't erase or something like that. And it was about like all these, you know, black towns that were thriving and like how all of them went down, like how all of them ended up being burnt. And every single time it was like something happening to a white person, rumored, usually a white woman. And the townspeople, including the cops, would just like come through and burn this town down. And every time somebody from the north would come and try to prosecute anybody from the town that they were accusing would do it, they were like, we don't want to uprile anybody. And even to this day, Tulsa still has done nothing. I mean, the people in Manhattan Beach just got the beach back. You know what I'm saying? In L.A., like they just got their beach.
Yeah.
That shit was taken. The amount of times we can't do anything because it would upset
white people, make them uncomfortable. You can't make white people uncomfortable, and you can't startle Kirsten in the elevator. You know what I mean? You can't. Oh my gosh, startled, burn all this shit down. Like, that's not how that works. But this
cut
is
the cords. Cut the cords of the elevator. We done. We get
right. Exactly. And this is in the 40s.
I'm going to get off, then we're going to cut the cords.
Yeah, this is in the 40s.
In the 40s. So think about that. You have this handsome, well put together, physically fit, mentally cognizant, articulate, educated black man coming to this southern town that speaks better than all of the white people. He's more knowledgeable than all the white people. Who do you think are?
Screw the 40s. I keep thinking about literally, was it six years ago when we had a black president, and then after that black dude came through, we got the craziest white man of all time because we just hired a black dude in that jump. Like, that is...
Yeah, that was wild.
That is insanity.
America was like, let's get the least qualified white person to show.
Yeah.
You know,
just to prove a DR. Just to
this prove the show. This is where it's at. Yeah, I was gonna say one of my favorite lines in this was, they asked the captain, "Oh, where'd you go to school? Like, you have a law degree?" And he's like, "Yes." It's like, "Where'd you go to school?" And he said, "Howard." And you go, "Oh, what are you rich? What are you family rich?" And he's like, "No,
that he's not really smart."
No,
that's
no.
You're rich.
My daddy was a mailman. Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah. And then he's like, "Well, I went to West Point."
Okay. You
know? All right. Okay.
There are no black people there, and you're like, "Yeah,
right.
There's a reason for that, and it's not because they weren't qualified."
Exactly.
They had on Vox today, like as we're recording this, they were talking about the vaccine mandates and like how the government is trying to force people to get mandated and how like they may have to send troops certain places. And they brought up how the last time that had happened is when they integrated the schools in the South. They integrated the schools in the South. A lot of governors were like, we're not doing it. So they sent armed guards and like troops down there to handle it. And then someone said the date of when that happened. Like, when that is legit in our parents' and grandparents' lifetime, that they weren't allowed to be in the same school as a white person. So even watching this movie and seeing, like, was it the white soldier lunchroom versus where the black people were, and like how even this captain, they were like, why is he in here? People below him are talking to him like they're his superior.
Yep, I wanted to touch on that too. Crazy.
Like out their neck with no fear. With no fear.
Yep. Yeah.
Man.
When he first gets there
and he's walking into the barracks and the white private walks by and he's just like, boop, 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 boop. I'm white. And then he's like, wait a minute. Oh, shit. He was a captain.
Yeah.
And he stops and he turns around. And he's like, I love how he just looks at him for a minute like, word.
Hey,
you didn't see the cars.
Hey, you better salute me.
Yeah.
I was going to say, and then after that, he goes to... So I forgot who the lieutenant was exactly what his like position was, but you know, or he was in charge of the military, the color military police, and the guy's like, he sees him, and then he's like, okay, well, you know, they didn't tell me you're gonna be like, it was gonna be a Negro, you know.
Yeah,
I don't know. It seems like they don't really like
you.
And then he's like, you mind if I speak freely? And he goes, you haven't stopped.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
What a good
it's
line.
It's like you've been speaking freely
this
whole time.
Yeah.
You acted like, it's like.
Okay. You mind if I speak freely? I was actually hoping you would dial it back a little bit. Like,
he was like, I'm immediately going to ask for you to be sent back home and for this investigation to be canceled.
You know what I really wanted to see in this film, though? An air conditioning unit. Is that too?
I don't know. You know, you definitely wasn't getting that. No.
They really do like go in on the like, they're like, listen, every scene, somebody, they're going to be shiny.
Yeah.
We're going to put deep pit stains on every.
Yes.
Every actor's going to have pit stains up to their clavicle. Like,
yo. I mean, it's one of those things I keep thinking about this movie when you see, first off, I got to go back to just the talent on display in this movie. Like, honestly, I think we talked about it before. I think Robert Townsend deserves all the flowers. I feel like he doesn't get enough of those roses because he did so much for black folk early on, from directing like so many movies, some of our favorite comedy specials. You know, if you
Five Heartbeats. Okay, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, come. I mean, shit. I mean, I even think about like the Eddie Murphy special. He directed, which one was Purple Suit?
Raw.
It's like, I think about him directing that. Yeah, man, he's been out here. Keenan Ivory helped write it. It's like, Robert Townsend done so much, and then to see him and see the dad, I'm sorry, I'm going to say the dad from Sister Sister. James, don't kill me. I'm sorry. The dad from Sister Sister. I'm sorry. I've never seen him young and not as a dad. And I was like, look at him out here all young and spry, just with the shits.
Hilarious.
Never seen him young.
I haven't. I've only seen him as the dad. And then I've seen him on like, my mom watches some doctor show and he's like one of the veteran doctors on the show. But I'm like,
Meteor
that's
Man.
The dad from, no, it's Moesha. Sorry, the doctor. I mean, he's the dad from Moesha. My fault.
Yeah,
people about to come after me for that. I'm sorry.
You're talking about William Allen Young, which is his name.
Moesha. Come on, man. Who ain't like Moesha, bro? That was the first time I ever seen like a black girl on a sitcom like that. But also,
Rudy and Denise Huxtable.
See, my thing is like, I was not a fan of The Cosby Show. Like, I grew up and I was like, I didn't know what preaching to me was, but I was like, something I don't like off. How this guy's like... talking to me. I was like, I just don't like it. Like, he came to D.C. and Baltimore was telling people to put their pants up.
Draw's been able to say this with, you know, some bass in his voice.
Yeah, listen.
The thing that actually makes me mad he's like, about he's the like, Cosby see, Show.
It's like he doesn't, check our tape. Before 2016, he ain't talking about how his hate for the Cosby Show. And now all of a sudden, he's like, I ain't never liked the Cosby Show. That nigga sucks.
No, you better get
checked. And we're all just like,
listen,
okay.
We got to check the tape, okay? We got to check the tape.
The thing that makes me mad about the Cosby Show is in the pilot, they're a mess. Like, the family's a mess. Like, he's still a doctor, but everybody, like, the kids don't want to do their homework. Like, they're everything's a mess. Felicia's walking around in a robe. Like,
really?
These kids are driving me crazy. Yeah, the pilot is better than anything the rest of the show ended up doing.
I'm going to have to watch that. And honestly, I wasn't a huge fan of the show, but I watched it because it was black people.
I get that.
You know what I mean? And there wasn't a lot of watching, and there were successful black people. And it was kind of like, in your face, yeah. whites. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. We got a brownstone. I was like, yeah, man.
Right, right. Just to watch it was dope.
I like.
Wait, can
it.
I ask y'all a question? Does the fact, come on, does the fact that a black person killed him, killed the sergeant,
wow.
for some reason it hurt me a little bit.
It hurt me too. It hurt me too. But I think that the rendering of the story is pretty great, and like, and it touches on something a little bit more complicated than just black people hate white people. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
and I think that's why it hurts your heart. You know, like, because it really is like that's part of why that's part of why it takes so long for it to come out. Is he's like. They will think that white people did this. And the reason that he did it was because he thought that he was, and rightfully so, because he had been basically shitting on specific black people for so long. You know what I mean?
Like, Not just shitting on, but getting them like murdered.
Literally getting them murdered.
Up, yeah, taking their lives away.
But then it's like taking the lives. He literally slit the throat of
right.
some guy,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
And but like that was also taking a toll on him. I don't know. It's just like so... There's so many layers.
Yeah, so nuanced. Well,
the reality, though, when you think about it, Denzel's character, sure, he pulled the trigger, but white people still did it. The systems that they put
yeah.
in place.
Ooh!
Yeah.
All of the things that they put in place. The story is a lot bigger than that action.
Absolutely.
It's everything that everyone went through at the hands of systemic racism that brought all of those black people to that moment, to that point.
Absolutely.
Right.
You know.
Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't even peep that.
I mean
yeah. that honestly.
Well,
you about to say, Bray?
I was just gonna say it's just because so one of the great things about this movie and I guess the play is that you have all these different characters who are dealing with kind of different issues, and we see them like one by one because they're being interviewed. Right by the captain, but the first one we see is
Wilkie.
What is his name?
Wilkie.
Yeah,
Wilkie,
took
yeah.
me 10 and, years and so, to get them stripes.
Okay, yeah, sorry. Exactly.
No.
And the that first so time he tells this story, you know, and he's like, he's older than I think most of the other troops. He's been in this army for a long time, and he used to have stripes, but they were taken away by the sergeant because he was drunk one day, and the sergeant wanted to like teach him a lesson and was like, you're embarrassing us. Oh, also even before then, the captain was like, I mean, the colonel says to the captain, like, you better do a good job at this. Like, you know, like you're going to be a credit to your race if you are able to do something.
Yes.
Like, he literally says that line. Yeah. And so already we're kind of hit with this, like, I understanding of, oh, there's an expectation on, you know, not just you as an individual, but you as the spokesperson for all black people. Like, you know, mm-hmm. if somebody else screws up at their job, if a white person screws up at their job, well, that dude's just an idiot. But if you screw up at your job, it's because you're black.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
True.
But isn't that what we do? But like, for real, isn't that the pressure of being successful in black? Like, even for people saying like you're mainstream. Like, honestly, even when we had the Netflix show, it was like, you are representing like, blackness in comedy. Like, is that comedy corny? Like, is that comedy black enough? It like, are we doing like, sorry, go ahead. So much.
Almost especially though to soldiers, right? Like I don't know that I've ever seen the story told of a black soldier. Period. I'm gonna say period, but particularly like pre the civil rights movement of like black soldiers wanting to fight, and they want to fight for, it's like, what are black soldiers even fighting for if not fighting for black people and representing this sort of larger thing for other black, because they're not just fighting for America, right?
They're not fighting. I don't think they were fighting for America at all. They were fighting for equality within the system of the military.
Yes. And trying to get proven by that, because they're like, well, America honors military people so much, so if black people can prove themselves in the military, then we will get the honor bestowed upon soldiers.
Right, come home to a hero's welcome.
Yeah. I mean, that's so tough, because I think about that, and this movie's supposed to take place in the 40s. It feels like a lot and I do this a lot, and I feel like, James, you're probably a bit better at it than me, but like I feel like want approvals from certain things. Like, I will always bring up wanting to go to the Oscars and get an Oscar. We're like, but that is an approval from a place that does not have a majority minority voting system. You know what I'm saying? Like, if you were to tell me like we got nominated for a Golden Globe, I'd be like, hell yeah. Even though the Golden Globes have such a big problem, they're not even airing those motherfuckers no more. Mm-hmm. You know, whereas like the ones that should get the biggest, you know, cheer is the NAACP Awards, which has been going on for decades. Same with, honestly, the BET Awards, which I'm happy people are actually showing up to now. But it's like, it is constantly this thing of trying to prove your right to exist.
Right.
You know, like, that's what it feels like. Not, sometimes it's like not even equality. I think about it sometimes just like, yeah, these people are willing to die for a country that outside doesn't like them. And even inside, you know, that army base, they didn't like them at all. But I'm supposed to go die for these people and for their families, knowing that at the end of the day, they're going to say, it's not my fault God made you black. Like, that line, yeah. I just can't.
My favorite part of this movie that I imagine still happens in the stage version, but we're able to see on a significantly larger scale in the movie is they get the order to fight. They're on 24-hour standby or whatever mm-hmm. it was called. And everyone's cheering and celebrating. There's fireworks going. Yeah. Everyone's screaming, hollering. They cannot wait to literally go and maybe die.
Right.
Right. Like, but they're finally too, because they've been, I don't know, for how, God knows how long they were, just like on, they've just been playing baseball, you know?
They're similar in Red Tails, right? They wanted the chance to prove themselves. And the fact that they feel like they kept being pushed to the sidelines was like very aggravating. And especially when you're trained to kill, you know, you're like literally trained to fight and then you never get to do it. You know, it was the same thing in, not the race stuff, but the movie Jarhead was about kind of the people in the first Iraq war who were trained for the first Iraq war, but then like, they didn't really get to fight much. Because we were just so much overpowering in terms of like our air, like we just bombed the hell out of people. And so they were like mad that they didn't get to fight more, you know?
Yeah. Similarly, the thing I remember most about Jarhead is just at the end where they're like, the war is over. And so many of them are like, they haven't fired their guns. So they're just shooting into the air because they're like, I never got to do that. All this pent up energy is like being released. It's wild.
Wow. I mean, wow. I will say the one thing this movie does do is really paint this sergeant. Because I was wondering, because again, I haven't seen this in so long. For me, at the top of the movie, he was a villain until we started getting his flashbacks to figure out, like, I mean, that story of, you know, him being in the war over in France and like them like paying the not so smart black dude to dress up in a monkey suit and put a crown on his head. Like, there are moments where I will say myself, I get very nervous about how I'll come off if I know I'm black in a very white space. And if I see another black person, I definitely nod, but I'm really looking to see how they act. Cause I'm like, hey, look, man,
right?
I don't know if these white folks have seen, you know, some niggas like that. So like, we got to be cool in here. You know what I mean?
And the fact that we still feel this way, you know,
man.
It goes back to that thing that Frankie was saying, like literally so many of the things that they're touching on in this movie, that movie that came out in the 80s that's set in, you know, the, whenever it was set.
When
was
it set? The 40s.
World War II, right?
World War II.
Yeah.
So it's like, but it's still touching on stuff that's happening literally right now. It's wild.
Yeah, I've been in predominantly white spaces, see another black person, nod, and they look away. Because in that moment, I don't necessarily fit the image, like of aesthetics. Like maybe I have on, you know, sweats or whatever, jean jacket. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, I don't know that nigger. You know what I mean? Let me turn my head. And it's just like, and I'm like, wow. Wow. You're my brother. You're my sister. You know what I mean?
Man.
Yeah.
The number of times when I'm wearing a mask and I notice someone give me the nod, sometimes I'll respond to the nod with like a what's up and not a nod back. Like I'll like say something, you know? Mm-hmm. And like, but with a mask, I don't know if they can hear it. And so then after the fact, when I'm like, I know I said what's like I said what's up to him. Oh no, but I don't know. But I don't know if they knew that I reciprocated.
You're saying it's you that I walked by. I got you. Okay.
No, but Frankie, I'm saying I said what's. What I'm saying is I said what's
but
up.
But there's so much pressure I had double to that, James. Like I feel like it's you know, Frankie. Hear what you're saying is like I always would say I've gotten nervous about what kind of black I come off as. Like before when I was younger, it was clean shaven, Caesar haircut, no tats. Right. I got my hair braided today and I was legit like, man, auditions I'm gonna get are gonna be like drug dealer. Is this like literally I sat in the chair with the woman and she was like, yo, take some time. I was like, is this now, am I now too black? Like that was legit. Yeah. I had a conversation with a woman today, like, yo, if we do this, will I be too black? And it was my first time meeting her. She's like, I mean, I feel like it's in style. Just do what you do. I was like, no, that's not how Hollywood works. Okay. Like, how many niggas you seen with locks in movies?
Right, yep.
But it just never, you know, it's always that kind of pressure, which does suck that it is generational decades that we've still been dealing with the same thing. Lord.
It's so interesting. This movie's so interesting because it's really, it's like, at the end of the day, they're all stuck within this kind of racist white supremacist society, and even more so within this military organization in which like rank matters and like hierarchy matters and like orders matter, you know, and like you have to respect your you know senior officer and you have to do the things that your senior officers tell you to do, and there's all this like order and law and that kind of stuff, and then it's like how do you operate within that system that's inherently racist to push forward, you know, black people, you know, and that's kind of what most of them are kind of trying to do in some way, right? Like there's all these different tactics to do it because the captain comes in and he's like, I'm going to do, you know, my job. I'm going to lead this investigation. I have these orders from Washington, D.C. So he knows to a certain extent they have to listen to him. And yet he also knows he can't go above the corporal's head, you know, or the colonel, I mean, or, yeah. You know, and like he still has to operate within the system. And like at one point, like they're like, you can't arrest white officers. Nobody, you don't have that power.
Crazy. That was crazy.
Like, what?
And then he's like, okay, well, give me that power then. He's like, no, I won't, you know? And you're like, okay, so like, what do you do? Like, how do you operate? And then, you know, you have this sergeant and we kind of find out through the course of the movie that his whole thing was like, well, the way to uplift black people is by killing all of the dumb black people, all the black people who fit into this negative stereotype of ourselves, who he sees as like coons in some way, you know. He literally says at one point, like, the Nazis don't have, not all their ideas are bad, you know. Some of us just can't. I was just like, oh my God. It's like, you know, like, this idea that.
How much do you hate yourself? Go to therapy, my guy.
Yeah, and obviously we see that he does, like, he's basically already drinking himself to death by the point that he dies, but it's just like, you know, and then Denzel, it's interesting to have a person like that within the military, because his character is very much like, you know, like, I'm not going to take this, I'm going to speak up, I'm not going to allow you to treat us this way, and yet, he at the end of the day, it's like you are in this military and like they could just lock you up, you know, for disrespecting or, you know, I forgot who the character, what was the character who winds up killing himself? What was his name?
Oh, CJ.
CJ, yeah.
CJ, what CJ gets locked up for, Denzel's character already did, you know, months prior. Like he spoke back to this person. He punched him, you know, like he fought with him.
But the interesting thing about the dynamic of that relationship is the Sarge actually respected Denzel's character.
Right.
Because he exemplified all of the things that he believed in.
Yeah. Right.
You know, for black people, which, you know what I mean? Which is so crazy.
Yeah.
Right.
He didn't like the other guy. He didn't like CJ because he didn't like any Southerners. The one he liked the most was CJ because he was good at baseball and like to sing. And CJ made fun of
him. I had to look this up. Had y'all heard of the phrase Geechee before? I had to look it up.
I had not.
I had never heard it before. And as far as my understanding of what I was able to look up, which is like, which was, it was connected to like Geechee Gullah or like a type of Creole like speak. So he just sort of, is it essentially a way of saying like you're a, it's like saying like redneck, but
for black people, yeah.
But for black people.
Oh, my grandmother's from South Florida. So I, you know, watching it with her, I'm like, what is a Geechee? You know, what does Geechee mean? Mm-hmm. You know, and she kind of broke it down in that way. Yeah.
Oh, I had no idea. Yeah.
And he did like, you know, he had some kind of like superstitious, like, man, you know, sick. Like,
yeah, yeah. There's a crow in me.
Crow in me.
I love that the officer was like, oh, okay, okay. He was like, I was just joking around. You're getting too real about this.
No one ever listened to him when he tried, even in the, and this was messed up too, because like, even in when he's in prison and he's trying to talk to David Alan Greer and he's like, I don't have my dust. And he's like, if you don't stop talking crazy, it's like, no, that's this man's full beliefs. Like he needs his damn dust. Like get that thing. It really dust. Is.
Like his strength within the dust. He said it. It will make you stronger.
Okay, it was, you know, it was angel dust in that pouch, right?
Oh no!
But if that's his religion, if angel dust is his religion, let that man gosh. Tweak.
Okay. You take a little sip. I'm like, hey, baby.
And then it, you know, we also have this other story, this storyline of them. They're, you know, they're playing baseball and they're very good and they're beating all of these teams. And, you know, CJ's also the best baseball player. And so it's just this thing. And they eventually talk about how he is. White people love to admire him. They love to admire his strength. They love to admire his talent, you know. But they know that they can put him in his place by making fun of, if they make fun of him, he'll just kind of smile and nod and, you know, he won't stick up for himself. And that makes them feel good about themselves, which is one of the reasons that the sergeant hated him so much, you know, is because he was both envied by white people, but also ridiculed. So he was like, oh, this is your strongest person and we can ridicule this person.
Right.
You know,
I remember my grandfather used to tell me, and it was so interesting thinking about it. He would say the most feared thing in America is an intelligent black man. And I was like, when he said it,
dangerous thing in America is a disrespected white man. But go ahead.
No, but 100%. But that's the thing. Ooh. But that's the thing though. And I think that line is so fine. True. It's like, if your smarts, whether it's a black man or black woman, your smarts, if it is smarter than a white person who thinks they have more agency than you and more power than you, no matter how you speak to them, it will come off as disrespect. Doesn't matter if you say it in the nicest way possible. The fact that they didn't know it, the fact that their feelings are hurt or damaged at some point, 100%. All hell can break loose.
I got fired from a job for that exact reason. I was the director of talent acquisition for a tech company. And so I had built their entire recruiting department, their college recruiting department, like all facets of workforce management. I had created all the programs around it. And so I had it running as like a well-oiled machine. Like when I got there, it was garbage. And the goals that they had been trying to reach for like 3 years, I was able to get them there within the first year of working there. And so I had, exactly. but it's all good. So I worked directly and reported directly to my CEO. So I would be in meetings with the C-level staff and a lot of upper management. And I'm in a meeting one day and I'm just breaking down and going through our hiring process. And this white man who is actually at an equal level to me makes a suggestion that we change the way we hire rather than having a weekly hire date. He wanted it what he called a universal start date. And, he, you know, how they add words and make things sound like this is the new thing. We need a universal start date. But we were working with salespeople. So I explained to them we can't have a universal start date because everyone's bonuses come at different times of the month. So we're going to lose candidates because if we try to hire them on this only one date, you know, a lot of people aren't going to be able to do that because they want to get their bonus before they leave their old job, right? Mm-hmm. So I asked in that meeting, I said, if this doesn't work, how soon can we go back to my original program? And they're like, you know, whenever you have some data, come back within a month or two and, you know, we can change it immediately. So I collected 3 months of data because you need 3 solid data points to make an accurate assessment. So I take 3 months and we were losing literally 50% of our hiring candidates.
No way.
It was wow. So I call a meeting and they're like, oh, wow, great data. We agree. Let's go back to your way of doing it. Month later, my original boss gets fired. They put this other white man in charge of me.
I cannot.
The one who had the bad idea in the first place?
The minute they did that, I texted my girlfriend. I said, I'm about to get fired. I can tell you that right now. It may be like 3 weeks later, I got a phone call from my CFO. Hey, Frankie, we are, you're not fired, but we're terminating your position.
What the?
We don't need your role any longer. Long story short, I ended up getting a settlement because I immediately called a lawyer. But my point is,
hell yeah.
Oh, 100%. I was like, oh, okay.
Because you know what you're doing, as evidenced by everything you had been doing before they terminated your position.
Exactly.
Damn.
But how dangerous. How terrified and insecure are you, just as a person, that my idea is genuinely better? This is just a thought you had in your brain. I had actual historical data. And you know what I mean? And facts and figures. I don't go by feelings in business. I go by data. Because no one cares how you feel. This is a business. Mm-hmm. And you're upset because I want to do what's right for the organization, but you're mad that you were wrong. That's insane. That is insane. How deep does your hatred have to go?
But also,
I've heard a lot of upsetting things on the podcast. That is possibly one of the most, like, that is like so upsetting. Yeah. Yep. I'm so upset that happened. I hate this person.
But I'm not surprised though. I think that's the thing, like, even in this movie, those kind of things, I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised, you know, during this film when the white captain who was there was all chummy with the black dude at the end. You know what I mean? Like when he picks him up, he's like, hey, can I get a ride? And he's like, yeah, he's still kind of racist, but he's trying to be nice when they're in the car. And I'm like, it bothers me because this black dude had to come to the South against extreme odds and prove how smart, how talented he was. And also, he did something you couldn't do. He got two of your white racist boys off when you're ready to throw them under the bus. Like, right. He did that. You're ready to, like, we call them, like, these two assholes, whatever he said about them. Like, that dude protected those people better than you protected them. And what bothers me sometimes is that I think black people in general, especially black women, are just way more protective, way more understanding sometimes than I wish we were. Whereas, like, ooh, man, like, if he would have just been like, yeah, take them too. He'd have took two racist soldiers out. Like, that'd have been like, you know what? They didn't do something today, but we know they did something in the past. And they're going to do something tomorrow. Yeah,
right.
You know, we knew it. But
every like, outcast white person that I know, like a white person that was like, you know, the black sheep in high school or whatever, they always consistently across the board, the only group that would hang out with me and treat me nice were the black kids. Mm. That's just who we are. We're human.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
We
have
compassion because we know what it's like to be an outcast. Because we're, you know what I mean? We're on the outside of everything in America, just generally speaking, regardless of what our status or stature is. And so we'll take, you know, okay, cool. We know y'all as a people, y'all ain't shit. But come on, come to the party.
Yeah.
You know?
And black people have had to learn how to check their egos, because if you didn't, you would get killed.
Yeah.
It's like you'd have to learn how to have more forgiveness and to not be so ego driven, to allow people to do certain things to you to a degree, you know, but it's like, you know, you have to know when the line is crossed and when it's not, when it's worth stepping up, you know, fighting back, and when it isn't. And like, it was interesting, even there was that moment where the sergeant was making fun of CJ, and then Denzel kind of sticks up for him, but then I forgot exactly what, it was that England, like, where are you from, England? That was the line that kind of put him over the edge.
He said it something like this, Where you from?
Stop it, James.
No, he didn't say it like that. Stop it, like James. That at all.
James. I just think it was something like that. It was James, something it around
wasn't.
There. James.
It really wasn't.
It's like, okay, all right. I don't know. I'm saying I'm just thinking that's what I think it sounded like.
You're doing like Terrence Howard doing Denzel. Like, I need that to stop.
We from London, yeah, Mike.
That's a perfect description.
where you from?
But then, you know, Denzel's character is like, well, why didn't you... You know, why don't you stick up for yourself? And he's like, man, he's just joking around. Or honestly, I feel sorry for him. Like, a person who says something like that, they got to be in a lot of pain. I was like, that's damn, real. This nigga got so much empathy.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's got so much empathy for this guy who hates him. Like, who literally hates him. But he's like, yeah, like, I don't know, like, that there's something wrong with him, you know? And it's like, I know who I am. You know, that's what he said.
Which, and it was like, the interesting thing about that, we call, you know, they have that word simp now.
Yeah. Right.
And it's so funny how we use these terms like simp. And that character, CJ, on the surface, oh, look at this. He's a dummy. He's just letting people treat him any kind of way. But the reality is, like you just said, Braylock, he knows who he is. He's cool with who he is. So what you're saying on the outside, it doesn't matter. Okay, yeah, okay, sure.
Yeah.
I'll be your Huckleberry, whatever. Mm. You know what I mean? And that really is how you should be as a person. We shouldn't internalize everything that we hear. We shouldn't get offended or get upset or have our egos or our psyche broken because someone calls us a name or says a thing. And it's just interesting how we label sometimes what we could consider the best of us, these diminishing terms. As if they're doing it wrong.
Right. Yeah. It was so, that part of it was so interesting to me. Also, when the captain first gets into the place that they're, I guess they're like, they put him at a place where nobody else was and it was like kind of empty. But then there was the term snowflake was written on the mirror and I was like,
oh,
that was so interesting to me. It's like a term that's come back when I'm like,
used?
What did it mean then?
Still used?
You know what I mean? Like, was it the same? I didn't know exactly who wrote that. Was it white people who wrote that or was it the black people who wrote that?
I feel like the black people liked him. I feel like they looked up to him.
It seemed like the black people were like really
So what did the admirable. White people mean calling him Snowflake?
He was uppity. That's what I took it as.
Yeah,
it was like
uppity.
I thought it was like you uppity, which
oh yeah, yeah. You're a black person who
I heard someone
you think you're so fancy. Yeah.
Someone I know. My goodness, someone I know within 2021 was called uppity. It was a black woman. I cannot remember who, but I mean, when she said the term, I was like, who the fuck is using the term uppity in 20? It's going, man, it may not this, but hopefully it comes back to me. But I was like, that term bothers me to such an extent because it means you can't be smart. It means like, hey, if you're black, you can't be smart. That's what it sounds like every time I hear it. Honestly, guys, I got nothing to say to Hollywood because this movie has made me mad and sad at the same time. Like, I don't know how I emotionally feel after this movie because some of the stuff is still happening. I don't know. And that happens a lot with some of these movies we watch. But like this one, man, those microaggressions aren't even micro anymore. You know what I mean? It's just like this is
so. At the end, the captain cries. Which is also interesting because it felt similar to what Denzel winds up doing in Glory. Like, it was also a single tear. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, came down. I was like, did Denzel watch this movie and then go, oh, I like that. I'm gonna take that.
Technically, I think Denzel actually has two. I think he has one and one. But the one over here is like, go all the way down
to
cheek.
That's
true. You know what I mean?
Right.
Had that mean
but
face.
How do you make sure that happens? How do you guarantee
I don't know.
A single tear?
I got it. What did you think of this ending where the captain winds up turning in three black soldiers, basically? The person who did it, the person who saw him do it and said nothing, and then also Wilkie because he planted the gun on CJ. It was like this kind of thing where I was like, that's his job, and also, is this helping anybody? You know what I mean? Like,
well, that's what I love.
Who is
I
this helping?
That, I loved that at the end, the white captain says, I was wrong. And then, And then the black captain says, I was too. Because, like, I think that he felt that same way. He was like, you know, the truth is out. He fully did his job. You know, everyone that did wrong according to the law is now being arrested, you know. But who is it helping? You
See,
know?
My theory, and like and he ain't wrong, man. This is my thing. It'd be different if he came down there and he only was looking at the white officers and being like, I know it's one of y'all. Literally how white cops treat black people was like, I know it's one of y'all. Until they like find one little kernel of truth and like, I told you. He didn't do that. He literally said multiple times, I don't know who did it. The other captain comes, well, who shot her ass? I don't know yet. Like that black man should not have said to that white dude at the end of this movie, I was wrong. He was not wrong. He came to do his job. He did his job. He was right. Everything he did was right. He did the right thing, and it sucked that he had to do it. He should have been like, I hate
Well, what
being
do you
right.
think he meant when he said, I was wrong
to
too?
To me, it meant like he came down thinking a white person killed like a black captain. Like, and that was the thing. Mm-hmm. Like, he thought that. Everyone told him that's what happened. They said it was the Klan, then they said it was the two soldiers. So that was the thing. I don't think that was the case. He really was trying to figure out what was going on. And if he thought it was one of the white people, he just took that colonel and was like, see, let's arrest these two white folks. He didn't. I don't like that they had a kumbaya moment. I really don't like it.
But then why does he cry, though?
Because I think he cried because of what Braylock said. He put three black dudes in jail, and it doesn't help. I think he'd had to do his job, and it's like job over.
Right, but that's why he feels like he's... That's why he says he's wrong. He doesn't
for putting them in jail, being wrong about it not being a white person.
Yeah, wait, he doesn't think that he doesn't think that he's saying I was wrong too, but not because like standing up for himself and putting people in jail that did something wrong is the wrong thing to do, but because at the end of the day it was these three black men who are. You know, putting away three black men who are reacting to or who are under the boiling pot of systemic racism, mm-hmm. you know, like it's like the outcome of that to him feels wrong. Like I was wrong.
I
guess
that actually does make
sense. Oh, so he was wrong for doing putting him in jail.
He is basically saying what you said, which is I put three black people in jail. That sucks.
Oh,
I was wrong. I didn't read it that way, but that's an interesting take on it. If that's what he meant.
What did you think he meant when he said I was wrong?
I thought he meant what Gerard said too, of like I was wrong. I thought he was wrong. He thought it was white people who did it and not the Klan. I think he thought it was white officers who did it and that it was a cover up. And he thought
that
all the way up until
the beginning,
even when he was interrogating those white officers, he thought it until they said, I forgot exactly what they said, but they,
it was the bullet, right?
Oh, the bullets. Right. He was like, we don't even have bullets. He was like, we don't even have bullets. Like,
but see, in that case, then I like their kumbaya moment. I like their kumbaya moment even more because if you think about that white captain was doing the whole time, at the beginning he was like, there's nothing I can do. But I think he thought that those two white officers did it too.
Yeah.
You know,
he thought in the beginning that they did it.
No,
right?
Yes, so that's it. His whole point was the reason he didn't want the black lawyer there was because he thought that, oh, if there's a black person leading this investigation, these two white officers will never be arrested because they'll never
else,
let
right?
yeah they, they'll never then, let like a their black person
moment,
arrest them.
Their kumbaya moment is this like sort of beautiful twisted thing where these two these two people who thought it was black and white racism realized that it was way deeper than that, and they both were like, fuck.
See,
all right, come on, get in the car.
You're right. I don't.
You know what I mean?
I get that. But Hollywood has taught me that black dude is not on the same level as racism and understanding and growth that white dude was. Like, that black dude came to do his job, and even if he had a kernel of thought.
No, of course not.
Like, even if he had a kernel of thought, like, it could be one of these white dudes, it wasn't, and he did not simply go after white people. The first people he actually speaks to are the blacks on purpose. You know what I'm saying? This white dude is the one who had to change his mindset about this black guy. This black guy had no reason in my mind to be on the level of this white dude being like, me too. Nah, bruh. Right. You were wrong.
I know what you're saying, Dura. Well, the other thing that's twisted about it is that the other reason the white guy was wrong is because, not just because he thought it was those white officers, he also was like, a black person couldn't be smart enough to kill this sergeant and get away with it. Like, that's literally, he was like, oh, no, there, you black people aren't that crafty, you know, because it was smart, because,
I don't think he was talking about the intelligence of black people, though. I think that guy, he was a racist piece of shit, sure, but I think in a lot of ways he admired black people and kind of on some level knew that they were equal or greater too. And I think what he said, what he was saying was not that a black person isn't smart enough, but we're not dirtbags in that way, I think is really what is what he was saying. That's how I...
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, that's how I interpreted that for sure.
I think that he... it was this thing where at the end, I felt like the captain did the right thing to his kind of moral code and what the law is supposed to be. But it's interesting that he had to do that to prove himself to, I don't know who, I guess other white people, that he was an upstanding officer. But all of these other white people that he's doing it for, you know, or at least the people who are in charge, were totally okay with and were 100% already covering for two white officers who they thought killed this black person.
And so that
in of itself was like, so then when you black officer find out that it was another black person who did this, you not only threw him in jail, but you threw the accomplice, you know, you threw this two other people in jail as well. And so you were doing that because it's the right thing to do. And yet the people who are telling you it's the right thing to do
didn't do it. Yeah. Wow.
And that's the part of it that's so twisted. You know what I mean? Yeah. I think about that sometimes of like, it's like, you think about that in terms of the police, right? The police will talk about black people, like sticking up, like black people in black neighborhoods not wanting to snitch. And they're like, oh, it's so disgusting. And they won't snitch on people. And like, they're willing to let, you know, these criminals go, you know, just because of some weird black code. And yet when their officers, their brothers go kill somebody, they're a solid blue wall. Yeah. You know what I mean? They will cover for, will do anything to make sure that
accidentally.
I'm like, so you're criticizing us for a thing that you do you know what I mean? And that's the part of it. That's that double standard and that like, where you're just like, whoa. And you realize, well, if the person who's setting it up gets the control, whether it's right or wrong, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. There's no real winning. That's why even though the movie has like kind of happy music at the end, I was like, this is not a happy ending.
No.
Because nobody wins.
No.
No way.
Definitely not a happy ending for sure.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful film. It's a beautiful film.
Yeah.
It really is. Watch it. Get angry.
Get angry.
Yeah.
Get angry. I just feel like the one thing I would have wanted to change is like, you know, it's like, because at the end, you know, like we keep hearing that they're gonna like play this game and like maybe they're gonna play
the Yankees.
And I just feel like at the end, like there we could have had like a flashback to that last game, which like, you know, and naturally, you know, for out of respect for CJ, they're not playing. But then I feel like out of nowhere, a basketball just like bounces into the middle of the field.
The baseball field?
And you hear,
basketball?
Baseball field. Basketball bounces into the middle of the baseball field, and we just hear
I'll play the game, a whole game myself. I'll play it all myself. And then
James, what are you talking about? Yeah.
And then Steel pulls out his hammer and he's like, I got this. And
Shaq is not in this movie, dog.
He plays the whole baseball game by himself.
Then why you let him with a hammer and a basketball?
Yeah.
And then you hear a voice and he says, if you build it, they will come. And then what happens?
Kevin Costner walks
don't
out.
Don't do this. Braylock. Braylock. In this. You let him go too
thank
long.
You, Frankie. See,
every
Frankie
time.
Knew what
Frankie's
was
not on your side. Frankie, don't be on his side. Don't do this.
This was a stretch.
Priceline presents Go to Your Happy Price. What's up? It's Kaylee Cuoco. When it comes to travel, we all have a happy place. You can see yourself already there. It's beautiful. It might be sunny and sandy for some, neon and urban for others, deserts or rainforests or hiking trails. With Priceline, you can get to your happy place for a happy price with deals you really can't find anywhere else, like up to 60% off select hotels to Costa Rica or 5-star hotels for 2-star prices in Cabo. Go to Priceline.com and travel to your happy place for a happy price. All right, see ya. I'm off to Miami. No, actually, wow, look at that. No, I'm going to Hawaii now. Ooh, Cancun looks nice. You know what? Belize looks pretty nice this time of year. Or, Palm Springs.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
This episode is brought to you by Amazon Prime. Whatever you're into, with Amazon Prime, you can go deep. So if you're all about pop right now, you could watch pop documentaries on Prime Video. Discover pop playlists on Amazon Music Prime. And if you're really serious, order a rhyming dictionary with fast free shipping from Prime. From shopping to streaming to saving, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to get more out of whatever you're into.
Teams are the heart and soul of every company. And if you listen to Adobe's new podcast, The Power of Teamwork, you'll hear about why they're so important. Hosted by Adobe's Garrett Schwartz, The Power of Teamwork explores how collaboration fuels success through real-life stories across various industries. You'll even hear some of it firsthand from guests at HelloFresh, Gooder Sunglasses, Amazon's The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, and more. So listen and subscribe to The Power of Teamwork on Spotify now.
It's time for The Cause. We rate and review films not based on how much we liked it, but whether it helped the cause of more leading Black actors in Hollywood. So if it fully helps the cause, we give it a black fist. If it somewhat helps the cause, we give it a white palm. And if it didn't help the cause at all, we don't give it anything. So on the count of three, we'll all kind of do our ratings for
a soldier's story. Okay, I'm ready. I'm so ready for it.
Okay, here we go. 1, 2, 3.
There we go. We knew that. We knew that was going. We knew that was
four black fists.
We knew that was going.
Yeah. I mean, come on.
Yeah,
now.
I wasn't having a review for it. It's like
David Allen Greer, Denzel Washington. You know,
this was so great. Robert Townsend. Thank you guys for having me on so much. This was really fun.
No, thanks for being here.
This was thank you. Yeah, wonderful insight, and it was nice hearing about some of your own experiences too. It's very lovely.
Thank you.
This is your time.
Is there anywhere people can see you or follow you on social media, anything like that?
Oh, for sure. I'm at Frankie French everywhere. I'm most active on Instagram. Mm. And Frankie is spelled FRANQI FRENCH. And I'm also going to be on the season or episode 6 of Curb Your Enthusiasm, which is coming out soon.
Say so. What?
Oh,
hey. Say what?
I said it.
Out there with Larry? Out there with Larry?
My scene is with Larry David, too. It's pretty funny. It'll be fun.
Oh, fun.
Okay. When he walked in, they're like, Frankie, Larry, Larry, Frankie. And we shake hands, and I say to him, I said, I know it's a big deal for you to meet me right now. He just died laughing.
I love that. Oh, man, I can't wait to see that.
Curb is amazing.
That's so funny. Thank you.
I also have something coming out with Anthony Anderson. We did a House Hunters prank show. So that'll come out soon, too.
Okay.
All right.
Respect.
All right. Thank you so much. And you can follow us at Black Men Podcast on Twitter and Instagram. BlackmenPodcast.com is our website where we have links to merchandise. We got a defunct Patreon. We don't do new episodes on the Patreon anymore, but there's a year's worth of episodes on there if you want to do that. You can follow me at John Braylock.
You can follow me at James Third Comedy. Third is 3RD.
You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Gerard Milligan.
And also, if you rate and review us on iTunes and give us 5 stars, we'll read your review on the air. We don't have a new one right now, so get
the reviews, man. Reviews. I think it's because I be shading people when they suggest movies I don't like. I think that's, I gotta stop. I'm gonna stop shading folks. That's on me. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, listeners. You can do it. You can do it.
All right. Thank you guys so much. We will see you next week. Peace.
Forever.
This has been a Forever Dog production, produced by Melissa D. Montz. Executive produced by Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. To listen to this podcast ad-free, sign up for Forever Dog Plus at foreverdogpodcast.com/plus. Check out video clips of our podcast on YouTube at youtube.com/foreverdogteam. And make sure to follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Forever Dog Team to keep up with all the latest Forever Dog news.
What's up, Black Men Catch Up comic book fans? James III here to talk to you about my comic series, Junior, available now on Kickstarter. The Ghost with the Most Past Due Child Support is back in 4 brand new issues of this semi-autobiographical supernatural comic series. It's got all sorts of spooky hijinks for fans of Beetlejuice, The Good Place, and The Mummy, stuff like that, and features award-winning artists from Marvel, DC, Dark Horse, and more. It's available on Kickstarter through June 9th. Go to ruleof3inc.com or follow me at ruleof3inc on IG for more details. Donate today!